A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There was actually one pivotal thing that happened. My ex-girlfriend's mom at that time, she gave me a book called The Millionaire Next Door. And for me, man, I grew up like an upper middle class kid in Colorado. And I didn't, you know, there's always a safety net for me if I really, really needed it. So like if I failed, it didn't mean that I was going to be on the streets. It meant that I still had the opportunity to borrow money from my parents if I needed whatever. Like rock bottom for me wasn't that bad. And when you have that mindset, like that fosters a lot of mediocrity. And there's a term in that book called The Millionaire Next Door called economic outpatient care that charts the different levels of success that kids have based on like where they start in life. And it showed like straight up like a lot of upper middle class kids with the like socioeconomic and demographic backgrounds that I had end up not really achieving much in life. They kind of flatline because of not really needing to face any sort of adversity that creates growth. So I knew that I had to manufacture my own adversity, and the only way that I was going to be able to do that was by putting starting to create challenges for myself since they weren't there already. Like I knew I had to go out and just make things suck and then grow through that.
How you day? That was Tommy Joyner, and we were discussing what I believe is very prevalent in society today, which is mediocrity, or basically settling for what's comfortable. And Tommy is someone who, you know, came from a middle class, upper middle class background, but he always wanted more. And, you know, that internal battle of sort of figuring out what's next while knowing that, society has different expectations and your friends have different expectations is something that I find a lot of people find themselves in. So if you've ever questioned yourself and wondered if you could do more, I think this would be an interesting episode for you. If you've ever thought about maybe developing websites based on content or developing companies that, you know, are fueled by content, this will also be a good website for you. But, you know, as you listen to the episode, I want to challenge you all to think about what your true purpose is, what your true goal is. What is it that you want to achieve? What do you feel like your legacy should be? You know, think about these things and ask yourself, are you actually living in accordance to those values right now? Are you living, you know, a life that's consistent with the passions you say you have? So I hope you check out the episode. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you share it. I hope you go follow him. He's a pretty interesting guy. And he also has tidbits on travel. You know, if you're interested in travel, he's got some concepts on the stages that you go through when you travel to different countries rather. So check it out. As far as updates with me, I'm, you know, in the process of wrapping up the first draft of my book. So a lot of you have asked me what it's like to write a book. So a lot of it is, it takes a lot of discipline. You know, I basically give myself a writing schedule every day, and I, you know, chunk at it, and I basically just, you know, type, and then continue to just type my way to close to 300 pages. So it's going well. I'm almost done with the first draft, and then I'll be able to share more of the writing journey. But till then, enjoy the episode. Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today I'm joined by Tommy Joyner. Hey. sorry, I couldn't resist. But today we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, his career, his progression as an English teacher to freelancer to a nomad entrepreneur.
And he's the CEO of ContentPros.io, which is a blogging service, and they do agency type work. They build out a lot of services. And we're going to talk about different ways to build out your career as a freelancer, different ways to become a nomad, and ways to have a sustainable career while traveling and learning different languages. Welcome to the show.
Nice. Yeah, it's Halo. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. So, Tommy, I always like to start off a lot of my interviews with, you know, the guests giving a background or an insight into their career. So what the early days were like and how they basically navigated their way to where they are today. So what about you? What was it like for you as a kid? How did you know what you wanted to do? Or if you didn't know what you wanted to do, what were the sort of the paths you took to sort of get you to where you are today?
Let's bring it all the way back from where I began. I grew up in Carbondale, Colorado, which is a small town near Aspen, actually, and lived there till I was 18, spent all my high school years there, and then I went to college at a small liberal arts school in Colorado Springs called Colorado College. I played Division III football there and had a wonderful experience. I studied economics and got a degree in that. While I was there. But when I graduated college, definitely didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Kind of fell into a job working commercial insurance, which turned out to be a blessing later on. It's definitely something that I value that I did now in terms of the hardcore sales experience that I gained. But while I was there, I absolutely hated it. And I really had no plans for life and was just kind of floating around. And I think that ultimately led to a lot of dissatisfaction and unhappiness that I was experiencing at that time. Also, to be honest, I kind of kept the college party lifestyle going for a few years after I graduated, which I don't think really helped anything in terms of my personal development. But around the age of like 24, 25, I started to realize that, you know, I was going to have to make some big changes to put myself where I ultimately wanted to be, which was this grander vision that I had of an entrepreneur, someone doing things on his own, international travel, kind of living this global lifestyle, which I was nowhere near yet at that point. So that set me on a journey, which first took me to New York, sleeping on some couches, on some homies' couches on the Lower East Side, trying to look for work for a while. Wasn't a good place to go when you're trying to abandon a party lifestyle and save money. So I ended up in Chicago, actually, and got a job at a trade publication. Had that for about a year. And really, at that point, like, I had never gotten a job for myself. My parents had gotten me all the jobs that I had ever had in my life. I grew up with in a family of entrepreneurs that had companies that I could work for. And then after college, I actually ended up getting a job with one of my dad's friends. So I really wanted to, like, prove something to myself. So I got that. Yeah, at 25, I really got my first job for myself, which was a big achievement for me. And I worked there for a year and I crushed that job. I started like literally in like a boiler room setting and then ended up in the corner office on Michigan Avenue, managing like 7 people, making 6 figures on a year, on track to make a lot more. But once I had proven that to myself, I realized like, okay, this is still, you check the box, but this is still not what you want. I had a buddy that was teaching English in Seoul, South Korea at that point, and I was really intrigued by the idea of like making the jump to live abroad. I had read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, but I didn't really have the confidence that I could start my own business. I just wasn't there yet in terms of like personal growth and the confidence and the belief that I had in myself. So I made that jump to teach English in South Korea, which was such a pivotal step for me along my journey. And that really changed everything. I lived there for about a year and a half, fell in love with that country, fell in love with being abroad, traveled around Asia, volunteered in Indonesia for a while, eventually made my way back to the West and went to Colombia. It had always been like a lifelong goal of mine to become fluent in Spanish, which I was able to do when I got to Colombia. And then at the same time, while I was in Colombia, I decided that, okay, now I need to figure out how to maintain this lifestyle abroad and make money online. And in Colombia, I met a bunch of other entrepreneurs who were doing things and was able to figure out how to make a few bucks online doing freelancing, basically. When the sites that preceded Upwork existed, which were called Elance and Odesk, that then merged and became Upwork. And I was able to make money off of those sites. and turned freelancing into basically kind of a digital marketing agency. My business partner, where we're building out autoresponder campaigns and sales funnels, and then eventually turned that into a company with monthly recurring content writing subscriptions, which I run now, called ContentPros.io. And as we were talking about before the show, I've lived in a bunch of different countries since, and that's been able to support me kind of along my journey and free up some space to, you know, start thinking about some other things in life, which is also really cool. So, yeah, so I'm coming at you live right now from Bali, Indonesia, where I'll be for the first half of this year, and still living the nomad lifestyle.
Wow. So there's a lot to unpack there, and I want to break it down piece by piece. And the first thing that I want to talk about is that mindset of, you know, meandering through life. You know, you talked about how, you know, you had the party lifestyle, and then you didn't have, I guess, your first real job until 25, and, you know, because you lived in a family of entrepreneurship. I'm curious about the mindset then. What was in your mind as you were thinking, as you were growing through that period? Were you searching for a purpose? Did you think you needed a purpose? Or was there a moment where you realized, man, I need to actually try something else? Because it's a drastic change from sort of meandering through life to then deciding to travel and then launching a content pro, you know, ContentPro.io.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, man. And I mean, I'm sure you can relate to some of this, but I always felt like I had like something more inside of me that I wanted to explore and something that I was going to like continue to develop. Like even when I was going through my craziest of days partying in college and even afterwards, you know, a lot of people didn't take me seriously because of this external kind of character that I had created, which honestly was quite understandable. But I always knew deep down that I was going to evolve and that I was going to change. And I guess I was just waiting. I waited for a while to dive into that. And I think a lot of us do that. And, you know, fortunately for me, even when I've waited through periods of time, when I've felt transformation coming, eventually I've stepped up to the plate and I've done that. So, yeah, I guess it just took me a little while. Like by the time I got to age 25, like a lot of anxiety set in and I kind of felt like my back was against the wall. There was actually one pivotal thing that happened. My ex-girlfriend's mom at that time, she gave me a book called The Millionaire Next Door. And for me, man, I grew up like an upper middle class kid in Colorado. And I didn't, you know, there's always a safety net for me if I really, really needed it. So like if I failed, it didn't mean that I was going to be on the streets. You know, it meant that I still had the opportunity to borrow money from my parents if I needed whatever. Like rock bottom for me wasn't that bad. And when you have that mindset, like that fosters a lot of mediocrity. And there's a term in that book called The Millionaire Next Door called economic outpatient care that charts the different levels of success that kids have based on like where they start in life. And it showed like straight up, like a lot of upper middle class kids with the like socioeconomic and demographic backgrounds that I had end up not really achieving much in life. They kind of flatline because of not really needing to face any sort of adversity that creates growth. So I knew that I had to manufacture my own adversity. And the only way that I was going to be able to do that was by putting starting to create challenges for myself since they weren't there already. Like I knew I had to go out and just make things suck and then grow through that.
Yeah. Wow. And I think one of the things that a lot of our world today underestimates is mediocrity. I think mediocrity knows nothing higher than itself, but talent instantly recognizes genius. That's a quote. And that I live by a lot of times, but the idea of just settling or just, you know, living a life that basically, you know, you don't do something to test yourself. You don't do something to go outside of your comfort zone. I think is one of the plagues that's actually affecting a lot of us today because we don't actually get to become the best versions of ourselves. And it sounds like you, I guess that book really opened your eyes to the possibility of like, yeah, seemingly on the outside, you do have, you know, well-to-do parents and a comfortable lifestyle, but who truly is Tommy Joyner and what can he do? And I, that sounds like it set you down this path to what you do today.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I think that was like a really good way to sum it up. I think that's a huge thing. And I'm really passionate about like helping people try and break through that. Like I've recognized that pattern myself and other people. And like, it's definitely there, man. You know,
yeah.
Got to get on that, develop a little bit of a David Goggins mindset and just get after it.
Yeah, David Goggins. I love David Goggins. And David Goggins, for those that don't know, you should check him out. David Goggins is an incredible guy who just built himself after several failures. So the other thing that I wanted to dive into as you were talking about your intro is the idea of travel. Now, that can be intimidating to some people. You sort of, you know, leapt into this. And you said you had several goals. So one was you wanted to learn Spanish. So, you learned that. And then the idea of uprooting your life and going to another country can be scary. How did you sustain yourself initially?
Financially or psychologically?
Well, you know, since you broke it down into those two, let's start off with financially and then go psychologically.
Cool. Yeah, because there's like, there's a couple different components there. But when I left Colorado initially, I had a little bit of money saved up. And then I did have some money saved up by the time I left to Korea, because I was 26 by the time I actually went abroad, which I would say is sort of late for some people that like go teach English and do different things. Like if I didn't do it then I may have never done it. I know some people do it like a little later in life, but I mean, in the States especially, we're facing a lot of social pressure to be a certain way and to have certain things like done in our lives by then and to continue along a certain path. So for me to break out initially like required a lot of mental fortitude. But yeah, when I got to Korea, I had saved up some money. And then while I was in Korea, Korea is actually a really good place to save money while you're teaching English abroad. So I was able to save a lot more money, pay off all my debts while I lived there. I actually had owned an apartment in Denver and sold that while I was abroad. So I came into Colombia with a bit of cash, but you know, not enough to just kind of sit there and not do anything. My back was against the wall in terms of trying to figure out how to make income. So yeah, freelancing is like where it started, man. Like when I was in Colombia, I had embarked on a couple different projects. I was trying to sell eBooks for like 15 bucks online. None of that was really working. But while I was creating eBooks, I was working with a buddy who was helping me out, and he had a profile on Elance. And he actually he flipped his profile one day. This was quite genius. We were working as clients, hiring graphic designers and stuff on this freelance website, right? Mm-hmm. He flipped his profile and he signs up as a freelancer, and he has no skills whatsoever. So I'm like, what are you going to do, man? Like you can't write, you can't do graphic design. He's like, oh yeah, well I like can sell. So like I'll sell this job and then I'll find a graphic designer. We'll pay him less. And then I can just make money off the top. And I was like, whoa, that's a great idea. So, so we started profiles as freelancers, and you know, I felt very much like an imposter, pretending like I could offer these marketing services that I myself couldn't fulfill on. But I offered writing services. Within a month, we had knocked down a job for $5,000 online. We split the profits from that, and we found a writer to fulfill the work. We did some email copy for a guy, and that really just opened my mind to the possibility of I never have to move back in with my parents. I can figure out how to make money online. Like once I crossed that line, like I knew forever for the rest of my life that like since I believed and saw that happen, I would never have to go back to making money from someone else.
Yeah. No, I love that. And then obviously you, as you sort of got a taste of that and you decided that this was something you could do. I read that you kind of fell into the side project in a cafe at Columbia. So you were first in South Korea where you were teaching English, which you say it's a good way to make money. And Korea is also a good place for you to save money. And as you are saving money, your buddy who you claim to have no skills except selling, figure out a way to sort of make money that you like to do this. Did you, so was it a direct trip from South Korea to Colombia, or did you have other places in between?
I did go to Indonesia. So after Colombia, after Korea. So I traveled around Korea a lot. And then, by the time I finished my time there, I was almost 28 years old. So my party days, in terms of what they used to look like, were different. And I wasn't looking to travel around Southeast Asia and do the backpacker thing and like really just be drunk for 6 weeks. I opted to do a volunteer experience where I went and worked with this marine conservation outfit in Raja Ampat in Indonesia, and spent 6 weeks scuba diving three times a day, learning how to take surveys of the marine wildlife and ecosystem there that we would then give to the Indonesian government that they used to chart those areas and identify endangered species, which was a super cool experience. So I did that, and then I didn't jump into business right away. I went to Cartagena, Colombia when I first got there, and I lived with a family and studied Spanish intensely for 8 hours a day for 2 months, which really leveled up my Spanish game. And then I moved to Medellin. So it was a bit of a progression. And while I was in Medellin, there was a few months of just banging at the cafe every day with my friend trying to figure stuff out. It was 5 or 6 months before we ended up, you know, really figuring out what to do and doing something that led to revenue. So there was a lot of anxiety and stress associated with that period of time, which I don't always talk about.
Well, yeah, please. The stress and anxiety that comes with launching a business and uncertainty is one that we miss in a lot of business journals.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The business articles, because we often miss the middle part and we just talk about the beginning and then the end. So I'll be curious to learn more about that.
Yeah, man. Well, I think for me, I think we all struggle with this. We definitely all struggle with this, but anytime, you know, you think about launching a business, especially when you haven't done anything and when you're a little older in life, you know, I met entrepreneurs while I was in Medellin when I got there. Now, I was 28. I met kids that were like 22, 23, just crushing it online, doing different things. And that just makes you feel like behind the game, man. And that's like, it really creates this feeling of like being an imposter. And it's like, I don't even know what to ask these online entrepreneurs questions about because I'm so novice. So it felt really like intimidating trying to establish direction. So like here I am trying to work on a project, figuring out how to make money online. And like, I'm too embarrassed to even talk to the dudes that are doing it successfully and find out how they're doing it. So there's that. And then also, you know, I'm gradually running out of money and not bringing in any income really. Like I was kind of teaching English in Colombia on the side, but it's not really keeping up with my expenses, even though Colombia, especially at that time, was pretty cheap. And then just more questioning like life, like, okay, like what's the next step? Like you got out here, you went to Korea, you're living abroad, you want to sustain this. The worst thing in the world that could happen to you right now is to go back with your tail between the legs and end up in Colorado and get a corporate job again, which is what you know you don't want to do. There was that. And then there was also the thought of like, having to go back and work for my parents' company, et cetera, something like that. having my friends look at me like I had failed. All of those thoughts going through your head, man.
Yeah. And then throughout that, you obviously, you kept building, you kept pushing through, and you eventually launched contentpros.io. When did you realize that what you had was going to be successful?
At first, it's interesting because once you start making money online in the way that we did, when you're selling projects for as much as we were selling them for, and when you realize that people will pay high dollar amounts for things like sales copy online, and you can outsource it and make like an 80 or 90% profit margin, you feel pretty good about that. Me and my business partner made $20,000 within probably like 45 days or something. Some of those were receivables that took a little while to collect, but regardless, we're able to stack a lot of money really quickly. That meant that we had to keep selling. Like every month came and we had to keep selling, and we realized, you know, we didn't have an asset that we could sell, or anything that someone would buy down the line, or anything that we could really get out of operating ourselves, in a way that felt sustainable. So we started experimenting with things. We did that for like about 2 years. And it was fine. I mean, it sustained our lifestyle. We're making good cash. But we realized like, okay, like how can we level up? How can we create like an actual business? So at one point we just started offering people monthly recurring subscriptions for different things. We tried to sell emails for a while. We tried to sell like a consultation service. And eventually we landed on like just a content writing service. So we initially started out selling blogs because, you know, people want blogs consistently. If people are blogging, they're usually doing it consistently. And if they have blogs that they're having freelancers or ghostwriters write, they're paying them to do that on a regular basis. Or sometimes they even have an internal team member. So we identified that as like something that people actually needed. And then we were able to actually turn that into a monthly recurring subscription service and build our business around that.
Okay. All right. Well, I love that. Well, now that you've painted that picture, I'm sure a lot of people here who are listening or are aspiring, you know, freelancers or are currently freelancers who are trying to create that sustainable career. So what exactly makes up a good content, and what kind of systems can a freelancer, you know, incorporate into their routine to make sure that they have a sustainable lifestyle to go with creating sustainable content?
Yeah. So, man, there's a lot to unpack here, but basically like there's a couple different stages that you'll go through as an entrepreneur. And like, let's just focus on the one that I'm familiar with, obviously, where you're starting out as a freelancer, like actually fulfilling the work. So let's say you're an email copywriter, or you're like a sales copywriter and you're actually doing things. I have some high dollar, sales copywriter friends who do very well for themselves and they never leave this stage. Right. But essentially, there's a book called The E-Myth, Revisited by Michael Gerber, and he refers to that area of like evolution as kind of like the artist. Like you're the one doing the work, you're fulfilling the work, you're kind of doing everything. And then there's a later stage where you go to outsourcing the work at least a little bit. So maybe you have someone working for you doing the writing, but you're still managing that whole process. So you're still kind of the artist in terms of some of the stuff that you're messing with. But you're also a little bit of a technician. So you go from doing the work to having someone do the work for you and kind of managing the project, which removes you from part of the process, but you're still kind of involved. And at that point, you're still doing project-based work as a freelancer. So unless you have people on monthly recurring subscriptions or whatever, you're going to have to kill what you eat every single month. And that can be a little bit frustrating. And then your journey from there, and the next step is to like really turn it into an asset, right? So once you've identified something that people will buy, and that's something that people will buy on a regular monthly basis, you know, it's then your job to set up systems, get the team in place to actually start trying to sell that on a regular monthly recurring basis.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's like a little bit of the progression that we went through.
No, that's good. That's good. And then with your company, you say you can finally get outsourced content writing that you won't be embarrassed about. What do you mean by that?
So there's a lot of blogging services out there. Like one of the voids that we found in the marketplace, and this could be something that other people listening to the show could investigate, is if you're looking to develop a productized service, like what makes your productized service different? Like if you look at blogging services online, there aren't many out there that actually charge. There are some that charge a similar rate that we do, but we are definitely more of a premium service. So we don't charge the most, but we charge higher than a lot of the services that exist, because we pay native English speakers to write the content. All of our writers are from the States or Canada for the most part. It's just a higher quality of content than you pay elsewhere. And most of that is due to the fact that we pay our writers 3 to 4 times what you're going to find that the other blogging services that compete with us do.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to think of someone that needs your service. Can you paint who your ideal client would be? It would be, hey, I want to start a marketing company, but I don't know what to write about. And then they come to you and then they hire your writers, or how does it work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best customers for us are other SEO or marketing agencies that need a lot of content for their clients that can then kind of white label our service, and then we can produce for them. That makes up like the bulk of our customers. So we end up doing like a lot of work for, you know, Bill's marketing agency that has 20 different customers, and they all need a set number of blog posts per month based on different topics. And then he can then use us to fulfill all the production, just kind of give us the content calendar, tell us what to write about. We can do some research as well if needed, and then we can bust that out for them. We also work with a lot of B2B SaaS companies as well within a couple different niches.
Yeah, that's awesome. As we're getting ready to wrap up in the second half of the interview, I just want to briefly touch on the psychological aspect of moving. You mentioned it earlier. What was that like? I mean, this is a different culture. You have to deal with visas, different languages, different types of people, different cultures, maybe distance from family or even comfort. What tips can you share to the audience as they seek a career to be a digital nomad?
There's a couple different phases that you go through when you move abroad, and I think everyone should be aware of them before they do it. The first thing is uprooting is a huge thing, and just getting motivated to do it in the first place and making a jump that requires a lot of courage. And that's big step number one. Like if you can get over that hump, which a lot of people actually don't, there's a lot of people that have failure to launch that never make it there. So if you get over that, you're doing pretty good. But then once you first get to a place, for sure, there's going to be different things that you have to deal with. Every country that you go to has different visa rules for the most part. You can be in a place pretty much anywhere you go in the world. You can be in a place for at least 30 days. Most places that you go, you can get a tourist visa for 60 to 90 days pretty easily right off the bat. So you have enough time to kind of like settle down and adjust before you have to make your next move and figure out how you're going to extend that or get a different visa that will allow you to stay there longer. And you're going to experience a ton of euphoria when you first get to a country. And then I find that you're generally going to go through like a bout of loneliness associated with trying to make new friends and associate yourself with a different community and like really kind of fit in. And then that kind of like evens out over time, and then you just kind of feel sort of neutral. I think after a while, let's say month 4, 5, and 6, if you make it that far when you're abroad, you start to kind of normalize and get back to like a general base level of happiness. And then you really start to kind of experience the country again. I find that a little bit while after that, like, let's just break it into like a chunk of a whole year. Once like 8 and 9, you might get like a little homesick again. And then by the time you leave a place, you don't want to leave, especially if you've been there for like a year. It starts to really feel like home. You've generally formed relationships. Maybe you've even had romantic relationships. You've like lived a very full life where you're at. So I'm a big advocate for going to places and staying in them for a long period of time. Pretty much everywhere I've lived, I've lived in more countries than most of my nomad friends for longer periods of time. A lot of my friends bounce around a lot more than I do.
Yeah, so I believe the concept is called slow travel. So you basically stay in a place for a longer period of time than typically a tourist would, and you embed yourself there for a little bit and set up a lifestyle, and then you decide to go on after.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely more what I'm into. And I love to be in new places and see stuff, but you know, I still like to get in a routine. I like to work out, like to go on hikes on the weekend. I like to read books. All that stuff requires like a little bit of a base level foundation wherever you're at.
Yeah, no, I love it. noticed as well, a mutual friend, Danny Floyd, and you wrote a book.
So I wrote a book with Danny Flood called Teaching English in East Asia. And really, I just felt like I had a story inside of me that I wanted to tell about my journey, which I don't think I'm fully finished fleshing out in a way that is helpful to people. But that was my first attempt of just kind of getting a part of my story out there in terms of some of the stuff that we talked about early on that preceded my journey to South Korea and teaching English abroad. So in that book, I lay out kind of some of the stuff that I went through personally to get to where I got, as well as some steps that are associated with exactly how I got a job teaching English in Korea. So there's a lot of practical knowledge in there as well. And then one of the really cool things about that book is I was able to team up with six different people who had taught English abroad, a lot of which, I think almost maybe four out of the six, have gone on to do different things in the online entrepreneur community after their experience teaching English abroad as well. So people can learn from those case studies also. So I think it's pretty cool piece of work that we put together. It's gotten a lot of good reviews, and it's still available for sale on Amazon for like $2 or $3 or something. But it's a solid resource.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely put that in the show notes. I always like including projects of the guests, because I think they're one, they give insights into who the, you know, who you are, right? But especially when it's about traveling east, there's a whole misconception about travel period, but then when traveling east and traveling west is very, you know, they're very different, different types of mindsets. I think a lot of people sometimes think that they know eastern parts of the world based on what they see on TV or what they've read, and it's often incomplete. So, you know, I always like having first person accounts of what it truly means like to, you know, take in a different culture than you're used to, especially if you're from the West.
Yeah, that's a really good point, man. And if you haven't been to Asia and you're listening to this podcast, I really encourage you to get on over here, because it's it might just change you forever. It does to a lot of people.
Well, speaking of change forever, you describe yourself as not that into labels, and you're more into people and exploring the depths of what it means to be alive. What do you mean by that? I mean, from what I understand, we live in a world where everybody feels like you should be something, right? You should be in a box, and if you're not in that box, that means you're not cool. So why do you defy labels?
Yeah, man. Well, this is kind of a cool conversation, but I've gone through like a lot of like personal and spiritual work over the past year in particular. And like one of the things that I think I've always resonated with, or that I've felt deeply, is I've always been like very averse to like calling myself a certain thing. But up until pretty recently in my life, I've always felt like I had to define myself as, you know, like a salesperson or an entrepreneur, or a writer or whatever. And as I got older, I started to kind of try and pick what labels I wanted that I felt suited me a little bit better. And then I also realized that regardless of what label we put on ourselves, we're pigeonholing ourselves into something that comes from outside of us, right? So like all of these labels are essentially things that we're putting on ourselves to project to the outside world, like what we want them to think about us. And in my mind, that just creates this this illusion of separation when in reality, on a deeper level, nobody is anybody really, you know. So like we're all trying to be somebody, but really we're all part of the same thing. We're all kind of in this together. And I think labels, they just hold us back from like a deeper understanding of what it really means to be a part of the human experience.
Yeah. No, and that's a phenomenal point. So how do we get better at connecting with people truly for who they are? How do we, you know, get rid of our biases, or, you know, limit our biases, since we're all biased individuals, but how do we make sure we get to the heart of who the other person is and make sure that we don't create limited stories of people?
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Like, I think, I think like we can start with like little practical things. Like one thing that's really worked for me is like when I meet someone, like I never ask them what they do. Like I don't want them to feel any sort of like pressure associated with like trying to
tell me about like what they do to make money, for example. Like within the entrepreneurial community, it's cool to understand like what type of projects people are working on, whatever. Eventually you get there in a conversation. But not asking people what they do so that they don't automatically have to tell you something about who they are is one. And then I think just showing love and like being really generous and creating space for people when you meet them or when you interact with them. So just humility, man. And like generosity, I think goes a really long way in terms of like creating the space that people need to be able to disassociate themselves with labels and feel the love that is ultimately radiating outside of you, and hopefully have them recognize that that's inside of them too.
Yeah, no, I love that. I couldn't agree more. As we wrap up, where can people find out more about you, more about your practices, and maybe just go on the globetrotting journey with you?
Yeah, man. I mean, I post on Instagram a lot. So my Instagram is Tommy, TOMMY underscore Joiner, JOINER. So you can follow me personally there. In terms of my personal journey, I post a lot about like spirituality and personal development there. And then in terms of business, contentpros.io is my main thing. That's what keeps me afloat. So y'all can check me out there too if you're interested in what a productized service looks like.
All right. We'll put that in the show notes. Contentpros.io and Tommy underscore Joiner on Instagram. Make sure I put that in the show notes. As my mission statement, Tommy, is use your difference to make a difference. And it's the foundation of everything that I do. And every time I'm wrapping up an interview, I always turn that into a question for my guests. So, Tommy, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Lately, it's just been more about like, a lot of introspection, self-excavation, and doing the best that I can to speak my truth at all times. So like anytime I'm interacting with someone, I want that to be authentic. I know that I have a lot of quirks and there's a lot of weird things about me, but I've also learned that those things are very powerful and they resonate with a lot of people, and they've been able to help a lot of people through different things and difficult times that they're going through in their lives. So yeah, I guess if I just had one piece of advice or could explain or articulate how I use my difference to make a difference, it's just that I embrace that and I try to show up that way as much as possible when I interact with others.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That sounds like a journey to a very fulfilled life, and one that's always cultivating a growth mindset. So I'm very, very curious to just continue to follow you and see what it is that you end up doing, because you're already sort of creating this platform for people to have more flexibility in their lives. But I have a feeling that you're going to do something to impact people's lives in an even deeper way as you go into your spiritual journey, from what I'm listening to.
Well, thank you so much, dude. And I'm a big fan of your content. So, keep rocking. And it was good to be connected, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.